This is VOA News. Via remote, I'm Jim Bertel. The U.S. will slash troop levels in Afghanistan and Iraq to their lowest levels in nearly 20 years of war, after U.S. President Donald Trump pledged to end conflicts abroad. White House National Security Advisor Robert O'Brien says the U.S. is keeping 2,500 troops in both Afghanistan and Iraq for now.
Those troops will defend our embassies and the other agencies of the U.S. government doing important work in those countries. They'll enable our American allies in their important missions in those countries. They'll defend our diplomats, and they'll deter our foes. By May, it is President Trump's hope that they will all come home safely and in their entirety.
Acting Defense Secretary Chris Miller said the moves reflect Mr. Trump's policy to bring the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq to a successful and responsible conclusion. U.S. troops had already been cut by nearly two-thirds from about 13,000 this year, following the February 29th peace deal between the United States and the Taliban. Leaders of three major medical groups are warning that the Trump administration must share critical pandemic information with projected President-elect Biden's transition team. AP Sagar Magani reports.
In a letter to the White House, the heads of the American Hospital, Medical, and Nurses Association said the collaboration would save countless lives. They write the Biden team needs information as soon as possible on everything from hospital bed capacity and personal protective gear to plans for vaccine distribution so it can plan. Biden himself said yesterday more people may die if his team does not get access to the Trump administration's plans for distributing vaccines once they're ready. Sagar Magani, Washington.
For more on the presidential transition, please go to voanews.com. This is VOA News. With the world nearing 55 million total COVID-19 infections, including over 1.3 million deaths, the head of the World Health Organization says countries that are not taking aggressive actions to control the spread of the virus are playing with fire. Plans for vaccination programs began taking shape in Europe and the United States following recent breakthroughs, but surging coronavirus caseloads prompted new restrictions, with Austria taking the unpopular step Tuesday of closing schools and shops. Global hopes of beating the pandemic were high after U.S. biotech firm Moderna said its vaccine candidate was nearly 95% effective in a trial, a week after similar results were announced by pharma giant Pfizer. Four astronauts riding a newly designed spacecraft from Elon Musk's rocket company SpaceX greeted their new crewmates aboard the International Space Station on Tuesday. The successful docking was a landmark achievement for private space travel. Reuters' Adam Reed reports.
The SpaceX Crew Dragon capsule, dubbed Resilience, carried three Americans and one Japanese astronaut. They were given a warm greeting by their new crewmates.
And there they are.
Mike Hopkins is commander of the Dragon crew.
And so we are so excited to be here. We are humbled, and we are excited to be a part of this great expedition. And so we are looking forward to the next 6 months and can't wait to get started.
The station will be their home for the next 6 months. After that, another set of astronauts on a Dragon crew capsule will make the trip to replace them.
Congratulations.
NASA had previously been reliant on Russia's space program since 2011, when the previous U.S. shuttle program ended.
That's Reuters' Adam Reed reporting. The only known white giraffe in the world has been fitted with a GPS tracking device to help protect it from poachers as it grazes in Kenya. AP's Charles de Ledesma has more.
A conservation group in Kenya says the white giraffe now stands alone after a female and her calf were killed by poachers in March. A rare genetic trait called leucism causes the white colour, and it makes the one surviving giraffe stand out dangerously for poachers in the arid savanna near the Somali border. Now the GPS tracking device attached to one of the giraffe's horns will ping every hour to alert wildlife rangers to its location. Conservationists have thanked the Kenya Wildlife Service, along with the Northern Rangelands Trust and Save Giraffes Now for the help. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
For more on today's top news stories, please go to voanews.com or use the VOA mobile app. From Washington via remote, I'm Jim Bertel, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, and today is Wednesday, November 18th, and here are some of the stories we are covering for you this morning. The UN and other humanitarian agencies are warning of a full-scale humanitarian crisis developing in the Horn of Africa as thousands of people flee ongoing violence in Ethiopia's Tigray region.
It's important to note that the humanitarian situation inside of Tigray region was already challenging before the fighting started. There are some 2 million people in need of assistance in the region, approximately 96,000 refugees from Eritrea, roughly 100,000 internally displaced.
Hedin Lang is head of programs and policy at Refugees International. And the government of Zimbabwe says that it is concerned that a second wave of coronavirus pandemic is coming, with cases on the rise, especially in areas it shares a border with South Africa and Botswana.
We are indeed, as a task force cabinet, very worried about the developments. The COVID-19 rapid response teams have been placed on full alert.
That's Zimbabwe's Defense Minister, Opa Muchinguri Kashiri. She leads the country's coronavirus task team. And in Uganda, human rights activists said that they are concerned about the increase in violation and abuse of human rights in the country. Those stories and more coming up right here on Daybreak Africa, so stay tuned. The UN is warning of a full-scale humanitarian crisis that is developing in the Horn of Africa as thousands of people flee ongoing violence in Ethiopia's Tigray region. The UNHCR reports that an average of 4,000 people per day have crossed the border to eastern Sudan since November 10th. That warning is echoed by Refugees International, a global NGO based in Washington, D.C., which is raising alarms about what it calls a conflict that is becoming internationalized with hallmarks of a major humanitarian emergency in the making.
Over 30,000 Ethiopians have already fled into Sudan, and that number is expected to grow in the coming days and could reach as high as 200,000 in the weeks and months ahead. For now, they're receiving refugee status when they arrive, and that's an incredibly positive development.
That is Hedin Lang, head of programs and policy at Refugees International. He says that the lack of electricity, telecommunications, and the blockage of roads into the region is making relief efforts difficult.
Some efforts are being taken to coordinate humanitarian assistance for those affected by the conflict, but that's increasingly challenging inside of Ethiopia and Tigray itself, where most access has been shut down for humanitarians. Road access is extremely difficult. Communications and the internet have been shut down. The airport is largely closed. So this makes the job of providing humanitarian relief extremely difficult. Furthermore, the banking system and financial transactions have been largely disrupted. So sort of cash payments for humanitarian assistance have been deeply complicated at this stage.
Hedin is calling on the government of Ethiopia to facilitate pathways to access the people in need of help.
Beyond an actual cessation of hostilities, the most immediate thing that could happen that would have a very significant impact on the humanitarian situation would be to open up access for humanitarians, allow them to communicate, allow them to get assistance in to some of the communities who've been deeply impacted by this crisis. This is absolutely essential at this stage because you have, you know, probably tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people who will be affected by this fighting and who will be increasingly in need of humanitarian assistance.
Before the recent flare-up in conflict, the Tigray region was already home to over 200,000 internally displaced people and refugees.
It's important to note that the humanitarian situation inside of Tigray region was already challenging before the fighting started. There are some 2 million people in need of assistance in the region, approximately 96,000 refugees from Eritrea, roughly 100,000 internally displaced, and another 600,000 people who are dependent on food relief, even before the conflict started. This makes the closures to the borders, to the roads, and to communications going into Tigray incredibly dangerous for existing vulnerable populations inside the region.
Hedin is calling on the U.S. government to spearhead diplomatic efforts to end the conflict before it spirals out of control.
The United States is a very important bilateral partner for Ethiopia. And so I think what we'd really like to see going forward is a leading role for the United States in the diplomatic process to support efforts to reach first a ceasefire and then a larger political settlement to the ongoing conflict. You know, very senior diplomats inside of the State Department are clearly already engaged in this process, but what may be really needed would be support at the highest levels of government, from the Secretary of State over to the White House, in support of efforts to reach a ceasefire to the conflict in Tigray at this time.
The Ethiopian federal government says that the fighting is a limited military action against some members of the TPLF, while the TPLF says that this is a war against Tigray. As Ugandans prepare for elections next year, the National Coalition of Human Rights Defenders say that as campaigns gather momentum, there's been a series of sustained rights abuses and violations that require the immediate intervention of state bodies like the Uganda Human Rights Commission. Reporter Mugume Davis Rwakarinji has more from Kampala, Uganda.
Robert Chirenga, the head of the National Coalition of Human Rights Defenders, an umbrella of organizations working to promote and protect human rights in Uganda, says the current violations of human rights in the country need what he calls, in two quotes, an urgent attention from all the organs of government, including judiciary and the parliament.
With the different presidential candidates beginning their campaigns, the initial campaign days have been characterized by cases of indiscriminate violence and flagrant disregard of COVID-19 Minister of Health guidelines.
He says both reporters, human rights defenders, as well as politicians have been entrapped in these cases of abuses, adding that reporters, as well as human rights defenders, have at times been intercepted, arrested or detained, sometimes without trial or incommunicado.
Freedom of expression and assembly, peaceful assembly in electoral contests in Uganda, continue to come under pressure, as noticed in the start of official campaign period. On 2nd November 2020, operatives of security agencies were seen hauling tear gas canisters at well-branded media vehicles that were covering events following the arrest of presidential candidates nominee Honorable Robert Kyagulanyi Ssentamu, seen as a direct attack targeting media houses whom we consider to be human rights defenders.
Fred Enanga, Uganda police spokesman, blames journalists of bias.
There's a growing habit in the media whereby you find that you go out and get images of police officers and you start posting them on your online platforms, including Twitter, and indicating that these are officers who are involved in the excessive use of torture and so on and so forth. But we know that the way you're bringing it out, some of you even don't go ahead to find out the grounds under which these officers carried out such instructions.
Chirenga says with no head of the National Human Rights Commission, addressing issues of human rights remains challenging. But Sise Kagaba, a Kampala lawyer and activist, says human rights defenders should never give up on their call.
I still believe that other civil society organizations that are handling issues of human rights can continuously come up and speak against some of these vices. But also Human Rights Commission, I think, can also document some of these violations such that they could produce a report. This should be learnings that they could share with the wider country.
Rights activists here say the police should avoid excessive use of force and stop brutality and arbitrary arrests. They also want the Electoral Commission to fast track accreditation process for electoral observers and monitors. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
In Zimbabwe, the government says that it is concerned that a second wave of coronavirus pandemic is coming, with cases on the rise, especially in areas that it shares a border with South Africa and Botswana. The head of Zimbabwe's task force on COVID-19 told reporters in Harare late Tuesday that President Emmerson Mnangagwa's government was going to meet with South Africans to find ways to contain the situation. From Harare, Columbus Mavunga reports.
After Zimbabwe's cabinet meeting late Tuesday, Opamuchinguri Kashiri, the Minister of Defense, who leads the country's coronavirus task force, said the government was concerned by rising cases of COVID-19 in areas along the border with South Africa, as well as with Botswana.
And I can also confirm that Bulawayo, Harare, much north and much south are topping those problem areas. We are indeed, as a task force cabinet, very worried about the developments. The COVID-19 rapid response teams have been placed on full alert, but we need also to appreciate that Matabeleland and Bulawayo, by their proximity to South Africa, are a cause of concern. And I want to say that a team of ministers, of officers in the security sector are going to be meeting with their South African counterparts.
Muchinguri Kashiri said the meeting will be aimed at reducing the number of Zimbabweans who returned to the country illegally without the required PCR test certificates, which would exempt them from the mandatory 14-day isolation. Public health experts refused to comment on the development on record, fearing victimization. But they said they were not surprised by the rising cases of coronavirus in Zimbabwe. They said Zimbabwe has to scale up testing for coronavirus and enforce wearing of face masks, personal hygiene, as well as enforcing social distance, especially in public transport and in bars and nightclubs. The government confirmed that one school near the border with Botswana had been closed after 100 students had tested positive for coronavirus. Muchinguri Kashiri, Zimbabwe's Minister of Defense, who heads the country's coronavirus task force again.
So we are really taking a lot of measures involving communities, traditional leaders. Also, our Ministry of Information is increasing their awareness programs. So there is no really one particular solution to this issue. We are studying the situation very closely. And once we reach a decision, we will inform our public.
Muchinguri Kashiri was responding to inquiries on whether Zimbabwe was going to reintroduce a lockdown in light of rising cases of coronavirus in the Southern African nation. The country has recorded nearly 9,000 cases, including more than 250 deaths since the beginning of the pandemic in March. Columbus Mavunga for VOA's Daybreak Africa, Harare.
The Mo Ibrahim Foundation recently released its 2020 Ibrahim Index of African Governance. It shows that, among other things, that governance in Africa has improved over the last decade. VOA's Leonor Mudu recently spoke with the founder of the index, Mo Ibrahim, about the latest findings. And in this excerpt of that long interview, they start by discussing the number of elections in African nations this year and the political violence seen in some countries.
It is very, very sad reading what's happening in this area. And this has been captured in the data, actually. Over the last few years, we see the closing of the space of civil society. They really closing that space. One of the things you would not believe it, many African countries now decided that civil societies, NGOs, cannot receive funding from abroad. Is to receive something from abroad that make them agents of foreign powers. It's the same governments which is very happy to receive funding from abroad. Does that make our leaders agents of foreign powers? I mean, why is that okay for governments but not for civil society? That's only one of the silly measures they have introduced. It is really unfortunate that attack on civil society. And you know what, Leonard? This actually is a global feature. It's not only in Africa. You look everywhere and you see the rise of big men and many autocratic rulers around the globe. And the attack on civil society is becoming a common phenomenon. We see the fraying of the global order, actually. And that is a problem, because in the past, when there's violation of human rights, everybody will stand up, everybody, and condemn it and talk about it. Seems now that the powers that be are busy, either dealing with COVID or fighting trade wars, you know, among themselves, etc., or having their own internal problem with election, like you guys have in the United States. So there's a lack of focus. The public opinion is not really standing up to speak about human rights and defend human rights, which is a major loss for all of us.
Mr. Ibrahim, when we see incentives such as yours, where you recognize presidents that have had good terms, well, at least they've had positive outcome with their presidential terms in public office, and we also see how organizations like Human Rights Watch call on leaders to do better towards their population. But we still see that in African countries, it's not just an African problem, but because we are talking about Africa today, we see that there are still leaders who do not respect the rights of their people, dictatorship, and running for third terms or other issues such as this one. What do you say to these leaders? What do you say to African leaders in terms of really running democratic states and becoming examples of true democracy? What is your advice to that? Or what is your call?
Well, our call, because please, guys, I mean, you are there to serve. And please serve. That's what we expect from you. This is not, your country is not a personal freedom for you to do what you like with it. You are there to serve the people. Please behave and show us the good leadership we really we deserve and our young people deserve. They have the future of these young people in their hands. We need to focus on creating jobs for them, improve their education and their health. So if you're in that position of power, please use that power to develop your society, not to develop your own personal interests.
That was Mo Ibrahim of the Mo Ibrahim Foundation speaking to VOA's Lenore Mudu. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Let's go to West Africa, in the Gambia. Illegal fishing is said to be causing high fish prices in the country. The West African nation has lately become a target for illegal fishing by foreign fishing vessels, mainly from China. As Panderimba reports, Gambian environmentalists are calling for an end to illegal poaching. They warn that if concrete actions are not taken to end overfishing, it could cause a devastating blow to the livelihoods of Gambians.
With a population of less than 3 million people, the Gambia, whose economy mainly relies on agriculture, tourism, and foreign direct investment, the West African nation has been battling with maritime exploitation. Just recently, six fishing trawlers were grounded by the Gambian Navy. Four of the vessels came from China, one from neighboring Senegal, and the other from the Gambia. Asan Martin, a Gambian human rights lawyer, says illegal fishing has caused fish shortage in the country.
Today, in the market square, really, in our main markets, whether in Banjul, Serekunda, and the local markets, Birkama, really, there is a shortage of fish. It is caused by, I mean, most of these fishing industries, especially the foreign fishing companies that are fishing here.
When asked by VOA as to what was responsible for the fish shortage, Martin had this to say.
Currently, what is causing the fish shortage, we have found out, and there are a lot of causes to this. Partially, one reason is that there is a company, foreign companies that are within the fishery industry, that are also involved carrying fish out of the Gambia to foreign countries. It has caused a lot of shortage. And from our own investigation, we have been told that most of these foreign companies that are involved, some of them are even Chinese companies.
Gambian fishermen have reported experiencing low catch in their daily fishing activities. This has been attributed to the outflux of foreign fishing vessels in Gambian waters.
We are told that some of them are engaged in, you know, getting fish, processing these fish and making them into other fish, this thing that are taking to China to feed the Chinese fish so that the Chinese may have a lot of fish in China. Whereas in our markets here, in our local markets, the fish shortage, even the local fish, which we, the bonga fish, I mean, which is normally called cobalt, is becoming very, very scarce in the market nowadays.
Experts have warned against illegal fishing. They said the African continent has been losing billions of dollars annually from such an illegal enterprise. Martin has blamed the Gambian government for failing to protect the country's wildlife.
Right now, the government has no good policy towards fishery. They have no good policies towards agriculture.
Nyang Jai is a Gambian economist and also an environmentalist. He recently went on sea to monitor the activities of Chinese vessels in Gambian waters.
The openings of these narrow creeks have been threatened by the invasion of these Chinese trawlers, these big giant trawlers that should be out at sea and not out in the creeks.
Njai went further to lament the ramifications associated with maritime exploitation.
Gambia, as we once know it, is threatened, and is threatened because of dollars and cents coming from China, and in the end, there won't be any socio-economic benefit for the greater good because our environment would have been decimated and destroyed, just like the logging of wood has happened in the forest of the Gambia and the Casamas. Something must be done, and we need to do something.
The Gambian government has reaffirmed its commitment to fighting illegal fishing. It says illegal poaching wouldn't be tolerated and any foreign vessel caught would face the full scale of the law. For VOA Daybreak Africa, this is Pandering by reporting from Raleigh, North Carolina.
And that's it for this Wednesday, November 18th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your morning with us. Join us again tomorrow for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you a very good morning, Africa.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to sukus, Afrobeat to ndumbulo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. This is Peter Clotty, host of VOA's Africa Weekend show, Nightline Africa. Tune in. You will be glad you did.
Nightline Africa is a fast-paced, tightly edited news show designed to keep our listeners engaged from beginning to end. Nightline comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kHz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kHz, 19.2 meter band.